The reading this morning has these two aspects which are really the razor's edge of the spiritual path. It only mentions one of them. It mentions the necessity to be inwardly directed and completely sincere and authentic in your responses to God's guidance within and your embracing of the spiritual life. But that teaching alone can lead to disaster. And so it really just, it can't stand just by itself. It has to be understood in context. There's a story that Swami Kriyananda tells in The Path of one of his fellow monks at Mount Washington when Swami Kriyananda was a young man and Yogananda was still living. And that man, I believe the story's about Jean Haupt, but it might have been someone else. It might have been Daniel Boone, not that it really matters, but just to be accurate. One of the monks there said something to Swamiji, who was in charge of the monks, about, yes, I understand that we should do what Master wants, but I have my will too. And Swamiji presented this to Yogananda, to the guru. He sort of, what am I supposed to do with this comment? And Master's comment was, with amazement, Master said, but his will is not free. His will is not free. And that is the key to both individuality and discipleship. And it's not something, all I can do is talk to you about what I understand, but like everything else, well, in keeping with what we've read today, you have to really begin to understand that from the inside. The way we trace this back is this one sentence in Autobiography of a Yogi. Thoughts are not individually rooted, they are universal. That there are strata of consciousness that represent all the different vibrations that are possible to express. I mean, on the planet that we live in, it's very instructive because this is not a homogeneous planet. When we go into the astral world and apparently other planets in the material world, there'll be just one vibration. When you're part of Ananda, you're in a particular vibration. In the church, in the community, when we meet as friends, many of you don't live in the Ananda community, or many of you have jobs in other places, and so you know better than I can tell you that you go places and things are different. My little experiment into the many potentials of human life are my experiences in the swimming pool at the YMCA, where various people have various ideas about what kind of music would make our experience more enjoyable, including certain people who run aquatic exercise classes who feel that not only does their little section of the pool need to hear what they think of as music, but everybody in that huge cavernous echoing room, even if you're underwater, needs to hear it. You know, and I have become her enemy because whenever I'm there, she consistently knows I'm going to raise a big hoo-ha to get it to stop. I even try to say to myself, what does it matter? But it's this sound that comes through. I'm going to just digress wildly here because I saw, those little things that show up on Facebook. Somebody has invented a machine that puts out fire with sound. And they're only demonstrating it on a 12-inch frying pan, and the thing that's pointed at it is about 12 inches. It just looks like this big round object on a tube. He points it at the fire, and the fire goes out. And it's a sound wave, and they talked about all the experiments that they had to do. And high register sound didn't do it, but very low bass. And then they listed all these well-known popular groups that use that sound in their music. But that really deep sound sucks the oxygen out of the space. How about that, friends? Okay. And so the fire can't burn. And nor can I breathe. Even underwater, you know, but that's what we're working with, that there are many influences. And there are a lot of incarnated humans who really resonate with a lot of different frequencies that others of us don't resonate with. And they look at what we're doing and I think almost literally can't see it. They just can't see it. It just isn't there. There may be an apparent building. There may apparently be people in here, but it's just imperceptible to them. Nothing is happening here. I remember a friend once who wasn't involved came to Ananda and wanted to watch people meditate. I said, well, it's not real interesting, you know, but it was just sort of like they didn't know else how to relate to it. So that was sort of how they put it. But the truth of it is that even though we think we're making free choices in the sense of I'm deciding what I'm going to do, we live in a universe of vibrations. The creation is vibration. It's Om. It's the vibration of Om, and all expression of creation is Om. It just depends on how far it's moved from its central source. It's a very interesting way to think of it. There's the pure sound of Om, which we imitate with our gong after meditation. We imitate with our voices. The music that we sing is closer to the central vibration of Om. Interestingly, in terms of language, they say that the language of Sanskrit is closer to the actual sound of things than other languages that have moved farther away. Because everything, I mean, a thought is a symbol, a word is a symbol of a thought, and the more it vibrates with the consciousness of Om that it's meant to represent, the more clear and true the communication is, and the more at the center of things. And everything is Om in some form. It just, some of it is way far away from the central reality. I mean, the problem with that pounding bass like this is quite apart from whether you enjoy it aesthetically or not, which is a different question, is that, as Swamiji described it, it constantly reaffirms the individual separate self. And he says, even to the point where it's like, I don't care what anyone else thinks, I'm just going to do what I'm going to do. And you see a lot of very violent acts are committed in that sound wave, because that sound wave says, I want, I will have it. My reality is more important than any other reality, and then we impose it. By the time we're thinking self-realization, even if parts of us go there, at least some of us have gotten into another reality, but that doesn't make us immune to these constant vibrations and these constant thoughts. You know, in the culture that we live in, which is extremely materialistic and very active in trying to maintain that materialism, just telling us that we're always needing more, and fashions change, and everything changes just so fast, so that we're always thinking, I don't quite have what I need. I need something else. I have to have this. You know, these shoes are perfectly adequate, but they're outdated. These are pretty. Where does all that come from? Where does that idea come from? Are we actually uncomfortable? Are we actually hungry? Are we actually not warm? Are we actually out of fashion? When I was about 15 years old and I was beginning to assert my own thinking. Just give me a moment. That was a complete untruth. I started asserting my own thinking as soon as I could think. But when I was 15 years old and was grown up and was trying to think about how I was going to present myself in the world, I became annoyed about the fact that somebody somewhere was telling me how I had to dress. You know, this is a costume that we created for this particular reality, my altar clothes. But walking in the street as a 15-year-old person, I didn't know about thrift stores at that point. For some reason, it wasn't part of my reality. But I could only look a certain way. I couldn't look like the Renaissance. I couldn't look like a Quaker at the turn of the starting of this country. I could only look a certain way. Whose opinion is this? Where did this idea come from? And much worse, I watched myself. When fashion would first shift, well, nowadays, this is more true now. When fashion would first shift nowadays, I would know it was ugly. But then gradually, I forgot it was ugly. And I began to think it was attractive. And I actually, when I really remembered it was when I picked up this, there was a period of time when women wore these big, heavy black shoes all the time. And I picked up one of those big, heavy black shoes and I said to my friend, "These are cute." And then it was like, oh, and I put them down like that. I mean, it's trivial. Fashion is trivial, but it's a very good example. Because all the time, we are being influenced. And then it becomes us, and we begin to assert it. This is why Master said about that disciple, "I have my own free will." But his will isn't free. That to Master, it's like, this is so confusing. He's not asserting free will. He's asserting opinions from other influences. And that's the difficulty we get into. We have many levels inside of us. We teach this in the meditation classes. We have the subconscious. Well, I'll just use two. We have the subconscious and the superconscious. And the subconscious is the habit of who we are. From birth in this life, from all the lifetimes before us, which is all these forces that gradually mold us into a certain attitude. And just spend the briefest few seconds considering the biases that we all carry in our lives now, and just think, where did they come from? I was born into an intellectual family. We were very verbal in our expression. I've said to you before, my older brother, was the state debate champion of Texas, which is a pretty big place, 2 years in a row. I mean, that kind of tells you what we were like. Maybe you already guessed. But I just grew up with this affection for intellectual conversation and a kind of intensity of interaction. To me, it seemed normal. That's all, just normal. And it was a Jewish culture, you know, and you sort of knew people who were, they're Jews. They just behave the way they do. Now I know a lot of Irish Catholics, you know, and they also have their own way. Everybody has their own way. Why do we think that's natural? And then we start defending it. That's what happens, you see. These impulses get in us, and then we think that's me, and that's who I get to be. And then somewhere along the line, we hear what I can only call the pure Om. Because we start in stillness, the Om begins to vibrate, and then that's who we are. And we pick up the waves that match us karmically. It's who we're supposed to be. Now see, this is the other side of it. We are all unique. It's really astonishing. You can travel all over the world, everywhere, and everyone is individual. I mean, if you're not used to looking at Chinese faces and you see 55 or 150 Chinese children, it might not be obvious to you immediately which one is which, but its mother and its father know. It never mistakes any other child for its child because it's always individual. And we follow in the weirdest way. We just piece together these individual realities. It really, I think mind-blowing is actually the word for it. If you spend any time thinking about it, it's just phenomenal. I used to be so, at times, I was so intrigued by the fact that no matter what happened, I was always me. And then sometimes I would get really freaked out about that, that there was never going to be a time when I wouldn't be conscious and I wouldn't be individually conscious. Even after realization, even after the bubble merges into the ocean, it can still, the individual bubble can still just float out. Paramhansa Yogananda, he keeps reincarnating. You know, Jesus, we presume, keeps reincarnating. They just keep coming back and they pull it out again. You pray to St. Francis with enough intensity and St. Francis will come to you. Him, right, that little bubble, just like that. How do he do it? I don't know. But it is there. So this other reality that we have, which is that I am a unique creation of God, personally created and personally loved, with my own personal destiny, or own individual destiny is perhaps better, and no one else is exactly like me. I mean, all of us, I'm sure, have had often very poignant moments where we realize that the people who are the closest to us even, nobody can know you like you know yourself, except a master. He can know you because he's inside of you. But others, very sincerely, as deeply as they try, there'll always be a moment where you realize, huh, how could they possibly not know? But they don't, because they move in their vortex and we move in ours. So there is this other God-given sensitivity which says that, you know, what I am, this unique little ray, also has to be honored. And this is the razor's edge that we walk. But then we have to make the decision within us, what aspect of that which I called, which I call I, do I want to honor? Because everything we feel, and everything that we often feel really strongly, is not necessarily dharma. And dharma is the word we're looking for here. Dharma is not just duty, not just the responsibilities that I have. It's my dharma to take care of my family or any of these things. The highest and best meaning of dharma is those actions which lead to higher consciousness. You see, that's what we're trying to do. And the individuality is that sometimes to unravel this particular ribbon, twisted ribbon that is ourselves, the way forward is not always the same for everyone. What can move one person forward may move another person back. There's a story told about disciples of Ramakrishna, two different disciples who took the boat from Calcutta to Dakshineshwar where he was living. And one of them was on the ferry boat, and people began to speak against Ramakrishna because he was very controversial during his lifetime. You're going to see that so-called holy man. He's just crazy. Everyone knows he's crazy. And then the disciple just sat there quietly thinking, what does it matter what the fools say? I'll just be quiet. But when he arrived at the dock, Ramakrishna was there to meet him, and he was weeping. Why do you let them talk about me like that? Why don't you defend me when people say things like that? Then another disciple's coming across on the river, and the people were, oh, you're going to see that crazy man. And he starts making such a commotion, he starts rocking the boat. He says, if you don't stop talking like that against my guru, I'm going to sink this boat and drown us all. When he arrives on the dock, Ramakrishna says, what do you care what those people say? Why do you make such a commotion? You know, it just depends on where you're standing, you see. We think the path is linear. Everybody's here, and then we walk like this. You know, and then there's those behind us, and there's those in front of us like that. We're circulating, we're going like this, and we're all trying to move to the center. And if you're on opposite sides, you're actually literally going in opposite directions. And if you cross the center line, then all of a sudden you've got your back to where you're going. It's a complete muddle. It's just like spaghetti, all just sort of like this. And you just have your own. Have you ever tried to pull one piece of spaghetti out of the thing? You know, it's all wrapped up on everything else. It's so remarkable to me. This is, every time I put my power cords, you know, like my little headphone things, they tie themselves in knots. I've asked somebody to explain the physics of it to me. I don't understand that you can just kind of drop it in there, and then when you pick it up, it's all wrapped around itself. But that's karma. That's exactly what happens. Every time I pull it up, I think, well, there we are again, one more lifetime. You know, it's just all wrapped around itself. So to get it undone is like this. But we're always going in a specific direction. And that's attunement and that's dharma. Because merely to do what I feel because I feel it will not necessarily take you anywhere except in great big circles. This man once said to Swamiji, he had a sort of a fickle nature, and he said he would sort of follow one path for a while, and he'd get really excited and avid about it, but then after a while he would lose interest, and then he'd get inspired by this one, and he'd do it for a while, and he'd feel so inspired, but he was noticing that he kept sort of ending up back in the same place. And I remember Swami, in a very sort of prophetic kind of way, he said, yes. He said, going in circles does give you a certain sense of accomplishment. He said, the bigger the circle, the greater the sense of accomplishment. But that's just what he was doing, following what I want to do. I feel like doing this. I feel more inspired by this. I'm tired of doing that. This isn't working for me anymore. Lots of circles, lots of feeling of doing things, lots of opportunity to follow my own will. But where is the movement to higher consciousness? So we have to pay attention, not just to do I feel it, but what am I feeling and how does it relate to what the masters have taught? And what does my common sense tell me about, you know, what will be helpful, not just today and tomorrow? The difficulty you see is what we like, what feels good to us, generally speaking, is what's already easy and good for us to do. Or we get into the opposite. I hate it, therefore it must be God's will. That was the one I got into for a while. Oh, this makes me absolutely miserable, therefore it must be what God wants. Whereas in the past, suffering and sorrow were the coin of man's redemption. For us now, that payment has been exchanged for calm acceptance and joy. Now, at the end of this talk, which is just minutes away, you may feel more confused than ever, you know, which is not my intention, but maybe the result. But part of it is, yeah, this is very confusing. The subject of inner guidance is a very popular subject, and in the course of many years of teaching, especially when I was traveling around and trying to communicate these teachings without a setting like this, where it was really just what we were offering and whether people cared, we had to find topics people wanted. How to know and trust your inner guidance. It's a very, very popular topic. I got very depressed teaching it, and finally, after a while, I just wouldn't do it anymore because it was just too confusing. Because I feel can either be a superconscious call or a subconscious hunkering down. So I was talking to Swamiji on the phone once, and I said, I just don't teach the subject of intuitive guidance anymore. I just see that people misunderstand as much as they understand. I'm just not going to do it anymore. Boom, like that, you know, I want. His response was very, very serious, but very simple. Asha, the ability for people to follow their intuitive guidance is everything on the spiritual path. Oh, okay. He says, better that people try and fail than that they don't try at all. So that's where we are. But what we have to know is that which takes us toward higher consciousness is different than that which just moves around and feels good. This is subconscious comfort versus superconscious expansion. So the answer to all of this is that we have to immerse ourselves as much as possible in the vibration that we're trying to attain, especially when there's nothing at stake, so that we begin to have a feeling of what it feels like to be in tune. And that's the phrase that we work with, to be in tune. It's a simple phrase, but it's easy to understand because everybody understands music and notes. Even if they don't sing, even if we don't sing, we know what it means. You can tell when the notes match and you can tell when the notes don't match. And the premise, even of intuitive guidance, is that somewhere in the cosmos, my melody is being played. And when I'm trying to tune in, I'm not just trying to tune in to everything I've always been. I'm trying to tune into where I'm going. And yes, it's unique, but once we become disciples, there is also this universal element to it. Even once we move a step farther, we become disciples in our attitude, we become disciples of a specific path, we become part of a unique expression of that. You know, all of these different things begin to narrow themselves down, which is what that disciple, that fellow monk of Kriyananda, was rebelling against. But on the other hand, we're looking, we're getting, the closer we get to the Om, you know, the more sort of universal the sound is we're hearing. And this is where Swamiji says a central truth can be applied in many ways. So if we can get that essential attunement, and this comes from chanting, from praying together, from being in satsang, from reading the books of the path that you're following, from listening to Master's voice, to Swamiji's voice, from having uplifting conversation, from as much as possible staying away from those influences which we're familiar with but keep reinforcing a different melody, so that when pressure is on us, we'll know what we're looking for. It's really as simple as that. We'll be able to tell. You know, every mistake I've made in my life, of which there have been many. A young friend was talking to me, saying something about, well, my generation is probably going to, you know, we're going to make a lot more mistakes than you all did, speaking of that gap in Ananda. Not likely, I said. You would have to try really hard to mess up more than a lot of us did. I don't advise trying. We'll have to go see. You know, we all make mistakes. But if somewhere in your consciousness, even if you've lost it for a moment, you've practiced singing the right notes whenever you're able to. And that's basically how process works, how the process works. Do your best every time you have a chance to. Take every opportunity you can to hear, to reinforce the right melody. And then when there's a lot of other noise of I want, I can't, I won't, I'm afraid, I don't know, that just somewhere gradually that pulse will come in. And then you make colossal mistakes, or perhaps you will. Colossal mistakes happen. And if you're awake, you'll realize, oh yeah, I felt it, I saw it, I knew, I ignored, I guessed. And then you hear what that melody sounds like. I was remembering recently, there was this project, there was sort of a sequence of fundraising events, and different ones of us took turns. And somebody else who came before me was very successful, and I got a little competitive. This was like in the 70s somewhere. I got a little competitive. And so I did my little part, which was a total bomb. And afterwards, because I made very, very serious mistakes in judgment, afterwards Swami just sort of calmly and sweetly said to me, oh yes, Asha, whenever your ego gets involved, you make terrible decisions like that. And it's like I've always remembered that, because I remembered what it felt like. I was doing something selfless. I was trying to be good. But there was a lot of ego involved. And I just knew it. As soon as he said it to me, it was like, oh yeah, of course. So, you know, you get a melody correction. And we all have it, whether you have Swami Kriyananda speaking to you, or whether you just have the universe coming back at you, or he's talking to you inside your head. Oh yes, dear one, you were listening to the wrong song, and those are the right dance steps, but that was the wrong song. And then we just practice, and we just practice, and we just practice. Nobody, even if you try to abdicate personal responsibility, sooner or later it's forced upon you, because it is this razor's edge. Intuitive guidance is everything, and oh, be careful, be careful. Listen to the right melody, get really comfortable with what it sounds like, then have the courage to follow it when you hear it, and to disregard what isn't it. And we're all in it together, friends. It's just like, it's just one big, well, Swami hospital is the word Swami used. Just one big spiritual hospital. We're ambulatory and we appear to function, but compared to the saints, it's just one giant hospital. When somebody falls down, you just help them get up. And when you fall down, others will help you get up. The best way to think about it all is it doesn't really matter all that much. You know, whenever our egos get involved, we make terrible decisions. Like, so what? So what? God doesn't care. And really, in our hearts, we love each other. It doesn't matter. And if in our hearts we love ourselves with that same spirit, whoops, seemed like a good idea at the time, but didn't turn out to be so, better luck next time. And next time will always come, and grace is always there. God bless you.